Hello, Internet, and welcome to the Engadget Podcast. I'm your host, Terrence O'Brien. I am back from vacation and feeling pretty good. To my right, one of the lovely people who stepped in for me last week, Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
Hello.
Thanks for doing that, buddy.
No problem. I'm getting a little scared here.
Yeah? Over on the left, another person who stepped in for me, Managing Editor Dana Wollman.
Oh, hello.
How are you doing?
I am doing great. Congrats on your race.
Oh, thank you. Yes, for those who don't know, I ran my first marathon last week.
He had a good excuse for not being here.
It's pretty good. And directly next to me, the clearly very uncomfortable Carolyn Lowe, Reviews Editor.
I'm not glad you're back.
I can tell that.
And she did not fill in for anybody.
No. I did not help out at all.
Nope. But
Terrence is smiling, everybody, and
it's very creepy.
That's first warning.
Yeah. He's smiling with his mouth, but not his eyes.
Yeah.
He does not look like a man who's happy to be back from vacation.
Well, Sherlyn, because you weren't on the show last week, though, that means you get off scot-free here.
I was on the show.
Oh, were you?
I think you need to get your mind checked a little bit.
So you were saying you weren't stepping in for anything.
I just did my smile.
No, she just sat there.
Yeah. I, to be fair,
didn't contribute a thing.
Sherlyn just played the role of Sherlyn.
Yes.
Yeah.
I listened to last week's episode while passing out on a plane, to be fair, so it's kind of all a blur. But then, no, I do have to murder you as well.
Oh.
Because I didn't help.
I remember.
There was far too many Uncle Terrys to launch last week's episode.
I said none of them, though. It was these two. And Nate.
You
should go for Nate. Anyway.
Nathan
Ingram. Tits McGee is on vacation.
Yeah,
so that you really should be thanking me, actually.
We were like, you should.
Thank you, Dana.
Yeah.
See, calling Terrence Uncle Terry is like calling Donald Trump Donald, I guess. Like, just the seething hatred that we're seeing now.
Twitching.
It's going to be a fun episode.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to be back. I am actually kind of happy to be back. As much as work is work, it's good to be back in New York and back on the East Coast where people are somewhat normal.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, West Coast. I can't deal with you guys. You're way too laid back for me.
Too laid back. I don't know.
Yeah. So let's do one of my favorite things. Argue about stuff.
Okay.
It is time for Flame Wars. As we start every week, Devendra and Dana, you know the rules. You get 20 seconds to make your opening statement, at which point you
get
one of
these.
He's
good. I've never faced off against that guy.
Yeah, my favorite thing. And then at the end, Sherlyn, you are going to declare a winner based on the strength of
the argument.
I hold
the power. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I can get back at Dana now. Also, Devendra, because I don't like that guy.
Mm.
Are you just going to declare that everybody is a loser?
Everybody is a loser, let's be real.
Sherlyn is secretly a Trump supporter, so everyone's just sad.
People are going to come after me. No, I'm not. No. Anyway.
So let's start with Elon Musk and SpaceX.
Sounds good.
I have not had enough coffee.
I don't think you're bad.
That's a good name for a company. Like, you're not going to space.
SpaceX.
Yeah, SpaceX.
Okay.
It's pretty good. We are going to start with Dana, who is apparently super excited to go to Mars.
I'm not super excited, but as long as Elon Musk's ideas about Mars colonization are hypothetical, I don't really see how upset you can get. His ideas are optimistic and well-intentioned, and his company, SpaceX, is privately funded and is not dependent on poor, you know, individual stockholders. It's not accepting government money. So as long as it's privately funded and this is all hypothetical, why not praise him for being optimistic?
That's pretty good.
I appreciate that.
Tight. Yeah. Devendra, your rebuttal?
Yeah, I mean, I could see where you're coming from, Dana, but this also all seems incredibly pie in the sky. Like, they showed off a fancy video showing off, like, how this new space shuttle will take people to Mars. It all looks really fancy, but I don't understand if they can actually make it happen.
As always, you are way under budget on your time.
Aha!
Ruin my fun, and don't let me hit the buzzer. Dana, do you have a rebuttal?
Well, what is the question we're debating? Is it? Yeah, what's the question we're debating?
Like, I guess the question is, like, what's up with his decision to go to Mars, right? Is it feasible? Is it just, like, bluster? Because that's also something Musk has been criticized for in the past. The only thing is, like, he's consistently proven his critics wrong, too. Like, he made the Tesla happen. The reusable rockets from SpaceX are a thing. They've been, you know, helping send cargo up to the Space Center.
Well, it could be bluster. I'm not even arguing with you on that. But if as long as he's right now tooling around with his own company and resources, a company that he founded with a good chunk of his own money.
Sure.
What's wrong with that?
It's also because we know NASA hasn't had as much funding. So there's a danger if we offload some of this, some of the work that NASA would have been doing to another company. And if that doesn't work out, that's something potentially lost too, right? So I just want to make sure, like, before we really get started here, we know what's going on. Yeah.
So one quick question, though. His plans, do they involve a return from Mars?
No. Well,
we don't know yet.
His line, I think, was, you better be prepared to die or something like that for among
also,
the first
cancer colonists. Schmancer.
Cancer schmancer.
Radiation, I mean, schmadiation.
Yeah, traveling through space, yeah. You're open to all sorts of cancer risks.
Space flames.
Wait, so
the rockets will come back, technically, in his idea, but not the humans. Like, you're going there to colonize, it seems.
Did he? Yeah. So you were saying, right? You're going there to colonize. Did he say what was the main point? If you're going there and then screw cancer, what was the other
sense of adventure? Like, he's basically saying, like, we will have to move off this planet at some point.
Eventually.
So he just wants to get things started. It's just funny because I was watching the fancy promo video they made, and it looks all nice. And then the door opens to Mars, and it's like, guys, this is a hellscape. Why? What are we doing here? This seems like something you want to set up with scientists and people to, like, set up, like, a, I don't know, living environments before you start sending normal people over there.
Okay.
All right. Sherlyn.
I think it's a ridiculous idea, but I think Dana made a stronger argument.
Mm-hmm. Woohoo!
And based on the strength of the argument, I'm going to give it to her.
Okay.
Also, I don't like Devendra.
So, yeah, so you think see, bias.
You
so
think
biased.
A one-way trip to Mars is a pretty great
Sherlyn, you look very nice today.
Oh, wow. Look at that. I'm going to give
you
all
the points. I have some candidates for a one-way
now.
Trip to Mars.
I think we all have at least one candidate for a one-way trip to Mars. Sherlyn.
All right.
Yes.
Dana, you get all the points today. I'm just saying in advance,
okay.
Right? Okay, cool.
Let's move on to our second topic. Let's talk about the new Roku players. I'm not going to lie. I'm not 100% up on these things. This is one that
you're,
I went...
You're forgiven. Yeah.
I went, Roku has a new thing, and kind of shrugged my shoulders.
Every year.
So, Devendra, why don't you tell me why these new Roku players are not a complete waste of money?
Well, first of all, they're going really cheap. So Roku, for the first time, has a $30 player. That's a great deal. Anybody can put it on their other TVs. And they've also driven down the cost of 4K and HDR entry to $100 with their new Premiere Plus player. So basically, new features at a cheaper price.
No fun.
I don't like
what was the time there?
You had 4 seconds left.
Ah, sounds good.
Yeah. I'm super convinced you're, like, sitting down and scripting these. I'm gonna catch you one day. Dana, your rebuttal.
All right. So either my sense of time is fucked or Roku just announces products way too frequently. I read this about Roku's new players and I think, wait, didn't they just announce
they
new
had
players?
A new thing.
And when I say just announced, I don't know if I mean weeks or months or a year ago because again, my sense of time is
like
is
6 months ago they announced the stick. Yeah.
Yeah.
How is that no. How can that be 20 seconds gone already?
Devendra crams an incredible amount of information into 10 seconds. I'm like
speaking as thoughtfully as me means slowing down.
Yeah.
I guess. But, like, I was...
It's black magic, Sherlyn. Yeah.
That's way too soon. Like, I don't think you're being fair, is what I'm saying.
You can watch the timer. You're sitting right next to me.
This I may have talked over you, Dana, so sorry if I interrupted your time.
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with you, Dana, a little bit, I gotta say. I do kind of feel like Roku is constantly announcing things. Didn't they just announce something like literally?
6 months ago? They announced a streaming stick, but that's not like it's not often. Like they have a player refresh once a year, and then they have new things.
Everything
it's
else
been a year already.
Yeah,
has it?
Yeah.
Well, everything else you've heard. Are
I know
the
because
leaks.
I've had to
They're
review the
leaks.
Last one. So
yeah,
yeah. So. It's annual upgrade time, guys.
Right. What I'm saying is admittedly subjective, which is that it feels like Roku announces a lot of products often and that the updates tend to be fairly incremental and not groundbreaking, which means that if you happen to be in need of a streamer, you can probably safely buy whatever Roku happens to have and
not
wait for anything new.
You can be certain that whatever you're getting from Roku will be like the newest thing towards the end of the year. And, it's a little cheaper, a little more capable than last year. I would like a big change at some point, but for now, this is good.
I think we can at least agree that Roku makes great stuff.
Yes.
I own a Roku stick myself.
Yeah.
It's definitely not a new model, and I'm still happy with it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I have the
original. You could upgrade.
I have the original Roku
you guys,
stick. It's working fine.
That thing is a
it's
nightmare.
Slow, but I can handle
it. It's so slow. The new one, which I reviewed a couple months ago, it's just fast. It feels as fast as the set-top boxes. So, and that makes a big difference when you're scrolling through menus and stuff. They need to change their software. That's the one thing Roku really needs to upgrade.
I mean, I guess part of the reason I'm still okay with the Roku stick is I personally don't use it because I also have a Chromecast, and it's a lot easier to just send stuff from my phone.
Mm.
I know. I use my Chromecast all the time. Anyway, Devendra, I was curious, does the $30 option also support 4K and HDR? No,
no,
right?
No. I mean, that's for people with older TVs. Honestly, if you have a TV below 50 inches, you don't need a 4K streaming
box.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, you'll only notice it above 50 inches.
And so the $30 one, is it like as fast as the newest Roku's?
It seemed, I mean, I didn't get to see too much of it in action, but it seems faster than the original streaming stick and enough for like secondary, third TVs, things like that. Something you can buy for your parents or old, you know, anybody who doesn't have streaming yet.
So, Devendra had my attention the second he said $30.
There you go.
Fair enough.
That is a pretty good argument, all right. To be fair.
Yeah, I'm a cheapo.
$30.
It's hard to argue with. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I think the Chromecast is
so well.
Appealing.
Yeah.
It's an impulse purchase at that point. You just go, sure, why
it's
not?
A great
I have a couple of them.
Stuffer,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah. I think actually I had three Chromecasts at some point and went, how did I end up with three? And gave one to somebody. I was like, here, take this.
There you go.
There you go.
Our last topic is Yahoo's hack. So before we debate this, though, because I think this is a little bit of a complicated story, Devendra, can you give us a quick recap of this one?
Recap. I mean, so it was revealed recently that Yahoo, back in 2014, suffered a breach of information of 500 million users, and they knew about this, and they didn't tell anybody for years.
That's a record-breaking hack.
That's insane. Yeah, I think it's a record-breaking hack. They're blaming a state-sponsored hacker. But the crazier thing is, we didn't know about this. They did, and they didn't say anything. And I mean, I also wonder what Verizon's going to say about this, because they just bought Yahoo, and that was not part of the deal. Yeah,
they're
in the process.
To our listeners out there, we really don't know. No one knows what's going on.
We don't know.
From upstairs.
We're very much in the dark on this stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, that's sort of a quick recap. Dana, I will let you open the arguments.
Can we make the usual disclaimer now that this is an intellectual exercise?
Yes. we've said this multiple times, and I will say it again. Flame Wars is always an intellectual exercise, and not
necessarily.
Devendra
and I had to draw straws on
this
one.
May not have to reflect how we really think.
Yeah, no. There's actually usually an argument ahead of the episode about who gets stuck with the shitty point of view to have to argue.
It's usually me, but I'm glad it's someone else.
Today it's me.
You actually often volunteer for it, which I appreciate.
She is the contrarian editor.
Yeah.
So.
She's like, I'm going to argue in favor of
this wildly unpopular
dead or alive.
Yeah.
Yes, that was fun.
Dana, you have your 20 seconds to come to Yahoo's defense.
I'm not even going to try and come to their defense. The only thing nice that I can say about them is that there is some evidence that they have learned their lesson. For instance, their investment in security related stuff jumped 60% between 2015 and 16. And also, surely Yahoo will be run somewhat differently under Verizon without Marissa Mayer in charge.
Under time.
Nice. Good job.
Devendra, your rebuttal.
The con is this is insane. This is a huge hack, and no legitimate company would allow something like this to happen without saying anything. So, yeah, even though they're investing more in security, doesn't excuse the fact that they didn't tell anybody and have done a bad job of even doing basic security measures to fix it.
So,
go ahead.
Yeah, I have one question, I guess, before I'll throw this to you, Shalin, which is, did they have any excuse for not talking about this before? Like, did they have a reason why they kept this hack secret?
No,
I haven't seen the good one yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm arguing against myself.
Yeah, it's fine.
I haven't seen a good reason.
No, their reported reasoning actually makes the whole thing worse because it seems like their priorities were in the wrong.
Yep.
Wrong place. They were concerned about users jumping ship if they were forced to do something quote unquote inconvenient, like reset their passwords.
Yeah, a simple thing they could have done is like,
reset. Not the point.
Everybody's passwords.
And they took until 2016 to do that, right? Like, they only did that recently to ask people to change their passwords.
Yeah, I got that notification the other day.
You still use Yahoo Mail?
To be clear, I'm very glad that literally the only thing I use Yahoo for is fantasy baseball.
Okay.
So the only thing anybody was going to do is mess with my lineup, and I already lost the playoffs.
That's legit.
So,
yeah.
By the way, screw you, Sean.
Wow. Okay.
Okay, Sean.
All right.
It's my cousin. He beat me. He literally doesn't care about baseball at all. He just joined the league for fun. and he kicked my ass.
So I'm not clear on the whole Marissa Mayer thing, and I'm not sure if it's completely necessary to delve into this. Is she going to... I don't know that she's definitely going to not...
We haven't heard anything yet.
I mean, last that either company has said publicly is that she will stay on at least through the transition. Mm-hmm. But if either company has changed their plans, we wouldn't know.
No, yeah, we wouldn't know either.
Seriously, no one fills us in on this. We find out when the rest of the world does.
The thing, and I think the only reason people aren't as freaked out about this as much is that nobody really cares about their Yahoo accounts. Yep. That's like the ultimate thing. Like if this was Google, if this was even Microsoft, like this would be an end of the world situation. But Yahoo is in such a state of like, who cares?
Yeah.
Hundreds of millions of accounts could be compromised and everyone's like, meh, it's not a big deal, I guess. So it's still insane.
Okay. I don't feel bad for Marissa Mayer, but I wonder what her legacy is, because she put so much time and resources into product at Yahoo. Products that, do people use them and will they use them now that they don't believe they're secure?
That's a good question.
Well, I'm going to say that Dana had the better argument because it was backed by facts.
Geraldine. You don't have to do me any favors.
No, for real.
What do you mean facts,
it's, First of all, listen.
There are facts
already
right here.
I understand
more facts against this.
You are the arbiter, and ultimately you get to decide, But first of all,
I know how difficult it is to take contrarian views, and I applaud the fact that she made a sound argument despite...
This is not how debates are judged, Shirley.
I'm judging based on the merits of the argument, not the case in point. Not the story in question, but the merits of how she argued.
It's like a difficult gymnast routine in the Olympics.
Versus an easy one.
I did the Prudanova, whatchamacallit, vault routine, and you did your single somersault.
I guess. Thanks.
It's true.
This is a really weird and deep metaphor.
I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I know literally nothing about gymnastics.
Anyway, I made my call. So suck it, Devendra.
Okay.
So we have a winner. Dana wins this week.
Listeners, feel free to write in at podcasting.com.
An appeal?
I was going to say, send all your email directly
what's
to Sherlyn.
What's your Twitter handle, Sherlyn?
At Devendra.
Oh.
Yeah.
I get good ones, so.
Oh, okay.
The best part is no one's mad at me.
No.
Everyone's always mad at me. I'm used to it. It's fine.
Sherlyn just invites it.
I don't. Anyway, I hate all of you. I don't know.
Not me.
Not maybe.
You don't hate all of us. You. It's a secret. Let's move on, though. I want to talk to you, Sherlyn, in a segment we like to call Open Source. And you went this weekend, I believe, out to Red Hook, Brooklyn, to go see a boat race.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about this and what made it special?
What I went to was the Red Hook Regatta, the second one ever. And part of it was a 3D printed boat race, in which 3D printed boats were competing against each other to speed towards a target and score points. And we were very intrigued by it because I think all of us at first were like, holy crap, human size, like large 6-foot boats that were 3D printed, that's going to be amazing. Turns out they were 20, like, more like foot long.
You mean like when you would go to an amusement park and you could see those RC controlled boats?
Yes, those
boats. That you pay money to operate?
Those things are great. Yeah, I love them.
So people love them. I was slightly disappointed. First of all,
so were you?
You had your boating clothes on.
Were you really expecting like a 3D printed like canoe?
I was actually. Like,
we'll have that eventually.
I was.
I mean, I'm actually pretty sure we've probably already had that at some point.
But. Yeah. That's one of the reasons.
Did you have your boating outfit on, Trillin?
I didn't.
Like
I was warned against that afterwards. But so we were talking to the organizers of the event beforehand, and then they were like, so we'll need two people from Engadget to race their boat because they were going to print a boat for us to race. And I was like, I didn't think physical activity would be involved in this story. And I was very against it. I was like, I don't want to have to break a sweat. But
did you consider sending Dana in your place?
Actually, no, I should have. Dana's a very strong person. That's why I gave her the point. Eventually they were like, oh, yeah, no, someone has to, you know, use the remote control and someone has to load the boat. And I was like, oh, remote control. And then that's when I, like, and it was, like, slightly less impressive, but not altogether not newsworthy or
news. I'm glad you did your research on this show.
Yeah.
It's a shame that, I mean, our medium right now is radio mostly or sound. So listeners at home can't tell how actually well-designed some of the boats were. I'm looking at a photo now of one that was really...
Beautiful.
It was beautiful. I mean, which I guess is separate from the idea that it was designed through a 3D printer, but it seems that people took this seriously and used it as a creative outlet.
One thing that I found out through the reporting of this was that this had a lot to do with a program called Digital Stewards in Red Hook, which I had never heard about, but it's been 9 years. It's been going on for 9 years now. And it's basically a nonprofit foundation that offers a fellowship to Red Hook community members, mostly African-American because that's the makeup of the neighborhood, and gives them all this training in 3D printing, web design, 3D modeling, all of that really, you know, good skills they need to have to get work in the tech industry.
Was it these kids doing the...
It was largely these kids. They were a huge part of the event. Most of them were the ones competing in the race, and they printed their boats as part of the project.
And you got paired up with...
I got paired up with one of them. We eventually didn't print an Engadget boat, because whatever.
That's a shame.
That would have been a nice trophy.
We actually came up with a good name for it, too. I ran a poll in our group chat, and we decided on Bodie McGadget Face. It was beautiful.
Aww. Bodie McGadget Face is pretty good.
It's a very good name. Nate Ingram, I think, came up with it, I think.
we need to go back and make this a thing that happens.
We will. Okay. We'll 3D print our own boat. I got paired up with Robert Smith. He was a 21-year-old former digital steward. It was great. He's a complete stranger, and I had to immediately be like, I'm going to be your partner and help you win this race. We didn't win. We lost within the first minute. But
quick question. So you got partnered with a 21-year-old former steward, and you were competing against people who were how old?
Oh, of all ages. Okay. Don't even try to.
Like younger, like high school.
No. These kids were like at least in their late teens. Okay. I wouldn't think they
were. So not exactly a game of are you smarter than a fifth grader?
No, thank God.
I feel a little bit better now.
I would lose that game. But I was actually surprised. I was very surprised by the difference, the diversity of the people that came out, not only to compete, but also to support. I mean, I think people get this impression of Red Hook, or at least I used to, of it being, you know, especially after Sandy, being very in not the best economically, or at least there's a divide. There's people who are very well-to-do that are trying to make something in the area happen, and then there's the people who are just devastated by what happened.
Red Hook's weird. It was gentrifying, and then after Sandy kind of de-gentrified.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because it's in the worst spot. It's just like a weird elbow of Brooklyn right by the water.
Yeah. And not easily accessible by trains.
There are no trains there.
Yeah.
Only
that's
Ikea
kind of
ferry.
The big thing, I think, is like originally when it started gentrifying, it was because it's this sort of quiet, isolated part of Brooklyn. And then once everybody started gentrifying the rest of the borough, it was like, oh, but part of the attraction is the convenience, which you don't have in Redmond.
Yeah. And also water. Like whenever there's waterfront property, it tends to be expensive. And there's the Ikea there. So everybody likes to go down to that area.
It's true. There is an Ikea there.
But yeah, Red Hook is a strange neighborhood, too, because like there's a huge concentration of housing projects there. And that's the community that's really built up Red Hook for so long. So it is really strange to see it being gentrified for a second time, I guess. Whereas those, everyone else who grew up there, who lived there, had no choice. Yeah.
I don't know if they had anything to do with this event, but isn't MakerBot also based in Brooklyn, not even that far away from Red Hook?
They are
Gowanus,
based,
maybe?
No, but they're based in Metro Tech, the Metro Tech Plaza.
Straight up, downtown
further,
Brooklyn.
Yeah, further north. But as we were talking about this diversity thing, there was like one moment during the event which kind of almost had a hostile tone to it. There was a guy in a kayak who was going out to rescue boats that were had lost their way. Mm-hmm. And apparently people were throwing bottles at him from the pier. I didn't see this. I didn't witness it, but I heard the MC who was commentating the race say that, you know, we are hearing reports that people are throwing bottles at the canoeist, and please don't do this. We don't need this energy here. This is not the place for it. Mm-hmm. And then I think it stopped afterwards. So I think it was dealt very nicely, and I wasn't expecting it. It came out of nowhere, and I was like, oh, yeah, no, there's still people who, you know, don't like all these different types of people
all
coming to their neighborhood and doing all these things to change the...
Yeah.
But what was cool, though, was that there was this boat made of garbage. It wasn't a 3D printed
boat. How I thought you were going to finish it.
I'm sorry.
Made of garbage.
My train of thought is wild.
Well, I think you should quickly set up that there were two separate races. So there was the 3D printed boat race, which is what you competed in.
Yes.
And then there was a separate race.
Yeah. It was the DIY, a.k.a. homemade boat race, in which you didn't have to 3D print your boat. You could make it out of anything. And there was this artist called Sam Levine, and he had taken like a flat plastic wrapper and like stuffed it full of trash. Like there was like a sneaker in there. There was like a spider that was alive in the thing.
Why would you do that?
I know. Oh. I don't think he did it on purpose, and he just threw some trash in there and there was actually a spider.
Well, I guess that's better than having a rat, because that's usually what's in your trash.
Boat rat. We don't
need
it.
Boat rat.
That's better than pizza rat. Just going to throw it out there.
Totally New York personality.
I disagree.
Look, I'm just going to say this real quick and then we'll move on.
Yeah.
Pizza rat is the least impressive meme ever. It carried that piece of pizza for like two steps and ran away.
Terrence is jealous.
I don't like
you.
Yeah.
Video. Yeah.
He's more popular than you. That's
fine. I mean, that's fine. Most
the person who shot that video, I think, made a lot of money off of it too.
Oh, nice.
Like off of pizza rat.
Really?
Yeah.
God.
Yes.
Back to talking about me and my story. So let me finish this thing because I swear I'm making a point. So okay, garbage boat like was just beautiful. Everyone, regardless of who you were at the event, everyone cheered it on. It was so great. And it was like the MC was like, guys, this is my favorite boat, but he didn't score a single point. I'm sad. But I like you, garbage boat. And everyone, like when they were announcing the point tally at the end of the DIY boat race, cheered so loud for garbage boat. It was like great. It was like, and that's why the story ended up being how it, not necessarily just the DIY boat race competition, because there was the same support shown at the 3D printed boat race, but everyone just, you know, was so supportive of each other during the race. And I think that was kind of what really made me write the story in the end.
And also Apple and Samsung should make their next phones out of garbage.
It's true.
Because that's what the people want.
Yeah.
Everybody wants
Samsung already did
garbage phones.
Oh.
Sick burn. And with that,
yeah, I think that is the perfect place to end that and move on. It's time to move on to group chat, and I think there's only one thing we could possibly talk about this week, and that is Monday's presidential debate. So many people watched this thing. It was a ridiculous, ridiculous spectacle for so many different reasons. But I wanted to talk about for one reason in particular, and that is it marks the first time in a presidential debate that cybersecurity was like a major point of conversation. And I guess first, let's just kind of like get people's thoughts on that. Like, what does this kind of signify to you?
Well, it shows the climate right now. It shows that, you know, more and more people are being affected by cybersecurity breaches. And, you know, the Snowden stories have happened, so many things. Like, there's more state-sponsored hacking. So we're talking about, like, attacks from China and North Korea and stuff, too. So, yeah, it's more in the culture. It's not just something made for the movies now.
I think the fact that it's risen to the level of being debated about between the presidential candidates shows how much of an effect this has on everyone. It's clearly it concerns everyone. And like Devendra said, all the NSA leaks and the fact that we were just talking about the Yahoo email breach goes to show how like crazy it's all gotten in the past, like, what, 3-4 years, honestly.
I mean, Dana, do you think we're going to hear more about this at the next debate?
No, I mean, I am sort of surprised anytime any science or tech topics like this get that much airtime. I don't think for a lot of Americans they're a huge voting issue or their top voting issue. So I'm surprised that they get that kind of airtime on a national stage at all. Not unpleasantly surprised. I mean, it's good, but I don't take it for granted.
It makes sense that the debate, you know, organizers and the person moderating would want to ask those questions because they're journalists typically, and they know what's kind of a big deal now too. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm a little bit less surprised by it, I think, because the last couple of years in particular has seen such a number of super high profile hacks. There was, I'm blanking.
Target.
There's Target, Home Depot.
Dropbox, LinkedIn.
Yeah. And there was a couple of health insurance companies, too. Aetna was
Aetna,
one of them.
Aetna, I think, was one of them. We were affected. Or I was affected by that.
Were you? Yeah. Sorry.
It's okay.
Tim Kaine, the vice presidential candidate on the Democratic ticket, his information was caught up in one of those hacks as well. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense to me. I do wonder how much more of an issue it's going to be, though. Like, I'm wondering if this is kind of like we addressed it briefly and now we're done and we move on.
I mean, yeah. I mean, the wiser thing would be for us to talk more about this, because part of what was brought up is that, you know, the wars of the future won't necessarily just be about, like, typical ground wars. It's a bigger deal when it comes to state security.
And so I think that's a really interesting point. I think this is a good moment to sort of pause it real quick and play Hillary Clinton's response in particular. Before we play this clip of her response, I do want to read the way the question was phrased by Lester Holt, which, not surprisingly, considering it's a presidential debate, this is usually how it works. It is an incredibly broad question. But just to get a sense of context for where these responses fit in, he says, I'm cutting out a lot of the fluff around it, but he says, our institutions are under cyber attack and our secrets are being stolen. So my question is, who's behind it and how do we fight it? Which is an insanely broad thing that nobody can possibly answer in 2 minutes.
I have some thoughts on that I want to come back to, but play your clip.
Okay, so let's play the clip of Hillary Clinton's response first.
We need to make it very clear, whether it's Russia, China, Iran, or anybody else, the United States has much greater capacity, and we are not going to sit idly by and permit state actors to go after our information, our private sector information or our public sector information. And we're going to have to make it clear that we don't want to use the kinds of tools that we have. We don't want to engage in a different kind of warfare, but we will defend the citizens of this country. And the Russians need to understand that.
So she puts it in very specific terms that are different, I think, than a lot of the ways that we're used to talking about cybersecurity.
Sure.
In that it's very weaponized and very much focused on warfare. I mean,
it's very Cold War-y.
Yeah. I mean, it almost sounds like she's talking about nuclear armament in some ways. You swap
Definitely.
Out the word cyber for nuclear.
Yeah.
And that's, we're hearing more and more of that this year. Like, I had an interview with Alex Gibney, the documentarian. He wrote about the Stuxnet thing. And the big thing he's pushing, and even Oliver Stone, when I was talking to him around the Snowden movie, cyber weapons right now are completely, it's the Wild West. You know, we don't have any sort of like dialogue between countries. So anything can happen. There are no rules. And the thing about nuclear weapons, like I think after, you know, after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, there was a discussion. There was like an international discussion like, hey, guys, this will destroy the planet. So let's like start to talk about and manage this somehow. We don't have that yet for cybersecurity, even though it can do as much damage. It can shut down power grids. It can do all sorts of things to actual physical locations now.
So it's the Wild West, I agree. And I think accordingly, most people are not therefore good at talking about these sort of things. I mean, it's easy to make fun of some of Trump's pull quotes, which we probably will before the hour is up.
We have a clip of him we're going to play next.
You know, I don't think Lester Holt's question was that specific or as articulate as he could have been. I don't even know if I'm as articulate as I always can be when I'm talking about security. I don't think Congress necessarily understands the technological side of it. So I think, you know, we're talking about how Clinton and Trump discuss the issues, what language they use, maybe evaluating their understanding. I think they're representative of a larger problem, which is that most people do not understand the technological side of it, and most people are not good at talking about this.
Yeah.
I think that Dana has a point there. Like when Hillary was saying those things, she sounded like she was, you know, guaranteeing mutually assured destruction, right?
Yeah.
It's very strong language. But at the same time, I don't think that the best defense against someone or the best reaction to a breach or a hack from another state is to say, oh, we'll come after your information too. I think you should be defending your information better. You should be making it harder for them to infiltrate your content, because this isn't like a piece of land. This is something that once they get to, it could affect so many other things.
Well, I mean, I think it's in many ways reflective of one of the many criticisms that's levied against Hillary Clinton, especially from the left and a lot of the people who supported Bernie, which is she is very hawkish. Especially for a member of the Democratic Party, she represents a much more hawkish wing of the party, and I think that colors the way she discusses it. Because, again, it's that mutually assured destruction kind of thing. Like, don't you worry about it. You think you have weapons? Well, we have weapons, mm-hmm. too, and they're bigger and better, and they will wreck you.
Yeah.
But I do mm-hmm. want to take issue with one thing you said, which is that you're saying it's not a piece of land, and you have to think about it differently, which, yes, but in this more modern, like, global connected world and economy, is that information at the end of the day ultimately as valuable, if not more valuable,
than
land
saying,
itself?
I'm not saying it's not as valuable. I'm saying it's more. I'm saying it could impact more things,
right,
and therefore
right.
you can't just wait for it to be attacked and then go out after mm-hmm. someone who attacked it. You have to defend it like
but
it's your
that
life.
That does sound sort of like what she's saying is the thing, too. And I also wonder, like, Hillary's always been described as hawkish. Her support for the Iraq War, I don't think she'll ever be able to live down. And I'm surprised they didn't bring up more of that during the debates. But I also feel like she has to sound strong like this mm-hmm. because she has to.
I have questions, too, about what else would either candidate mm-hmm. have said. I mean, these lines, I think she was very articulate mm-hmm. and well prepared. But this idea of just generally, we will not tolerate attacks on our sensitive information mm-hmm. in the private sector, in the government sector.
Yeah.
I think both candidates had to say something like that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What would have made this a more valuable conversation, do you think? Would it have been specific solutions beyond that?
I mean, I think specific solutions would have been useful. I mean, the thing that we have to accept, unfortunately, about a venue like this is the presidential debate format is not constructed for actual, like,
sure.
detailed policy debate.
Not at all.
It's,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
it's more
not
about
enough time.
Talking points and making your opponent look bad.
Mm-hmm. And this is one of the more complex issues.
And this is,
they're all complex issues.
This is
this
a very
is complicated.
Complex and I do want to agree with you 100% that Lester Holt's question, as much as I'm going to say, honestly, I thought he did a decent enough job moderating.
Second half, yeah.
When he
I mean,
like, yeah. re-entered the building.
Yeah. yeah.
he went for a coffee break. Yeah.
He wasn't great, but he did an okay job. I'm certainly not going to beat him up over it, but this
he needs
is...
a buzzer.
He should have had
he
your buzzer.
Buzzer.
Yep.
He should have had my buzzer.
I was about to say, yeah.
But that question in particular was one that bothered me because it was so broad mm-hmm. and so nonspecific, and especially the who is responsible part, which is... so highly nonspecific, because what are you talking
yeah.
about? Who is responsible for
what? Which one?
What attack?
Which attack?
But
although
I will say Hillary answered well.
Yeah,
she
listening
said
Russia,
exactly.
which has been consistently blamed for a lot of the attacks on
yeah.
the Democrats right now, and even I think just a couple of days ago we heard of another one.
Yeah,
That's like their enemy right now.
And she used it to spin towards Clinton. I mean Trump, encouraging Putin to
yeah,
yeah,
act
yeah.
I mean that's a 1-2 punch.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Great. She did do a very excellent job of kind of going after him. And that, you know, once again, not super mm-hmm. policy oriented, not like great conversation about how you actually do something, but 100% effective debating.
Yeah.
I do want to come to Trump's defense about one thing real okay. quick, though. This will probably be the only time I ever do this. He is kind of right, though, to question whether or not we can say Russia is 100% behind this stuff. While the intelligence
sure.
agencies do kind of come to an agreement that Russia is most likely, there's a huge problem with attribution when mm-hmm. it comes to attacks and hacks, especially state-sponsored ones. I will, in the description for this, drop a link to a great piece by Violet Blue, one of our columnists, mm-hmm. about the problems with attribution and how even at the end of the day, if somebody says they're fairly confident, that's still like not good enough to hang anything legally around anybody's mm-hmm. neck for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think
I wish he had said that though, instead of trying to
yeah, I
make
mean,
it about the
blow.
Guy sitting
yeah.
on their bed who weighs 400 pounds.
Yeah. So
oh,
why
man.
Don't we? Why don't
for
we? Play
his
this?
Supporters. That's all his supporters.
We need to hear this.
Let's play this clip real quick, mm-hmm. and then we'll talk about Trump's answer
those,
to this question.
For those watching us watching this, good luck.
Yeah.
Look at the mess that we're in. As far as the cyber, I agree to parts of what Secretary Clinton said. We should be better than anybody else, and perhaps we're not. I don't think anybody knows it was Russia that broke into the DNC. She's saying Russia, 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 but I don't, maybe it was. I mean, it could be Russia, but it could also be China. It could also be lots of other people. It also could be somebody sitting on their bed that weighs 400 pounds, okay?
Okay.
And 4chan explodes.
Of course. Let's leave the morbidly obese people out of this.
Yes, for sure.
Well, no. I want to come. I'm going to skip over the cyber.
Yes.
Which is the really easy
oh, man.
One, which honestly, look, It sounds dumb, but it's a gaffe. Hillary said dumb things before. George Bush had nuclear.
But he only called it cyber. It's not even just the cyber. It's cyber.
Yeah.
And cyber means something when you use it on its own.
I know.
Yeah. It's very... We all know.
Trump doesn't.
So. He does. Oops.
But I mean, and we didn't play this part of the response, but immediately shortly after he talks about the people sitting on their bed who weigh 400 pounds who could be hacking into it, he also talks about his son who's 10 years old, who knows the computers really well. And it's just for so many reasons an alarming answer.
It's going to be his tech head, his son. So,
yeah. He's going to have a 10. He's so good with the computers, you wouldn't believe.
This is just like Idiocracy, too. That's how this all ended up.
I didn't take as much issue with the thing he said about his son as I did the 400-pound comment. It was just, it shows how clueless he is. It shows me, first of all, he doesn't watch Mr. Robot. but also that he, you know, thinks he clearly has these, like, stereotypes etched into his head of certain characters. He thinks it's a bunch of people in their beds.
I mean, I just think it underscores a bigger dynamic with him, which is that he sees all of this as entertainment, and where his purpose, he sees his purpose is to entertain us when it's not really officially.
How do you date against the Joker?
I hope that it is. Yeah. I mean, I hope that's what it is, because I don't think that's what he really thinks.
Also, to this day, I don't think anybody's seen Trump use a computer. I think that's like the ongoing thing. Does he know how to use a computer? Can he internet? Who knows?
Actually, is that a thing? I don't know that
I've
ever actually seen
it. Because all the press photos of his office, there's no computers at his office. Like, maybe occasionally he'll have a phone, but we've never seen him on a computer, I think. And, like, I think
a couple
sites are doing that.
I wouldn't be surprised if he can't internet, because that's where a lot of people get their information these days, and he's the least informed person I know.
I think he can internet.
Yeah?
I also just want to say that we are speaking Trump's language right now by using internet as a verb.
Well, yeah. It's a virus.
You gotta guess, yeah.
We're doing it somewhat ironically.
Oh, no. We're 100% doing it ironically.
Like, you're weird.
What?
This is not ironic. This is a thing of beauty.
That's real.
This is all real. I like that you have to look away from me as I stroke my beard.
Oh, my God. I didn't even know that was what you were doing.
Let's turn away from my beard, which is completely
let's
off
go.
Topic.
I'm sorry. Yes. My bad.
So I do want to come back to one thing real quick, though, and a little bit of plug for our site and our presidential guide, which we updated ahead of the debate. So there's now information, not just new information about Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, but there's information on Jill Stein and Gary Johnson and their stances on things. Although I can sum up Gary Johnson's stances on pretty much every issue in one sentence, which is let the market decide.
Yeah.
So if that's your thing, that's your candidate. But there's very little detail there. And we'll be updating it again with information on the vice presidential candidates ahead of that debate. But I do want to encourage everybody to kind of go read that and look at the updates, because going into the primary season, when we first put this thing together, cybersecurity was one of these big glaring holes where there was very little information about what the candidates thought for the most part. One of the few exceptions, weirdly, was Chris Christie.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out that cybersecurity is apparently much more of an issue and something that people are much more active in at the state level than at the federal level.
Sure.
So Tim Kaine actually fairly active on the topic of cybersecurity. Chris Christie was fairly active on the topic of cybersecurity, whereas most of the senators and stuff were not. Mm-hmm. And Hillary Clinton was one of the people who had this big glaring hole. And in the wake of the email scandal, it was very much a weak point for her. She has since released several very detailed white papers about a lot of her policies, but in particular, she does touch on cybersecurity a lot. So we've updated that with a link to the full policy paper, as well as quotes from that and plans from that you should go read, because it's super important information. It's super interesting, and she has ideas and plans that she literally just doesn't get to touch on in the debate.
For sure. And I mean, the important thing too is, like, these aren't people who are going to be leading all on their own, right?
Yeah.
It's not just them. It's about who they hire and who they listen to. My bigger worry is that Trump is just so intellectually uncurious. Like, he doesn't care, and he doesn't care about what experts or advisors will say either. So, yeah, that's the state of America today.
Yeah. Dana, do you have any final thoughts on the debate and Hillary Clinton, cybersecurity, Donald Trump before we sign off?
So we have a weekend of peace, and then the next one is what, Sunday, October 9th?
Mm-hmm.
October I believe 9th so. The vice presidential debate is October 4th, I believe.
Ooh.
So that's coming up soon.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Can I just quickly jump in and say that this is really interesting that this was the first debates I've been able to watch because it was on Twitter and it was on YouTube and it was on mm-hmm. all these different channels.
Yeah, it broke streaming records.
Kind of meta,
YouTube, yeah.
too, right?
Yeah.
Do you not own a TV?
I don't.
What? Different discussion for a different day.
It's
another
not that
day.
Weird. It makes sense.
Yeah,
it makes sense.
I don't own sure. I don't have TV either.
What is wrong with you guys?
We're not friends just because of that.
I'm not saying we're friends. I'm just saying
I have so many TVs.
I haven't had cable for.
Oh, that's fine.
Six
that's
years,
fine. But Sling like has changed a lot.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
Yeah, just I've been relying on Netflix and Hulu for like 6 years now.
So yeah, I hope the vice presidential ones will also be streamed online.
Everything is going to be streamed yeah. at this point.
Excellent.
That's good.
Yeah. I want to see more of what Bloomberg did with their live fact checking
uh-huh.
on this.
That was cool.
Yeah, that was so great.
Because I think this is one thing that was kind of like argued about in the lead up to it. You know, whether or not it's the media's job to be fact checking things. And yes, it is. That is our role. That is our.
How is
we have one and only function in this world, it's to fact check.
Well, if you want to live in a non fact based society, then yeah, facts are bad.
Then go to The Onion. I don't know.
Yeah.
Devendra, any last thoughts on the election or debates before we
I have so many thoughts. I'm good.
You're good?
I'm done.
All right. So, Devendra, where can the fine people find you on the internet?
Oh, I'm on Twitter at Devendra, and I also podcast about movies and TV at slashfilm.com.
Dana?
I am at Dana Wallman on Twitter. That's my full name with no space. As I always say, be nice.
Sherlyn?
I am at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter.
Let's not forget that Sherlyn, how she judged that one debate.
Wow, Devendra, wow.
Let's just send all the comments.
Just a reminder, he's a sore loser.
And I am at Terrence O'Brien, lots of E's, no A's on Twitter. And as always, thank you for watching. Please send us your questions, comments, concerns, any feedback. You can hit us up on Twitter at Engadget Podcast or email us at podcast@Engadget. Or just send all your hate mail direct to Sherlyn.
I always get targeted.
Thank you for watching. Make sure to join us next week where we'll have plenty more. But before we go, I want to leave you with the comment of the week, which comes from MNC77024. Hell of a name, guy. I want it to track my horniness and my ability to make cornbread.
You sure you didn't comment that?
I'm pretty sure.
It's your name.
Jesus. Yay.